Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, it is the Weekly Worldview. I am your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you so much for joining us once again for the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And I have to warn my extremely attractive audio engineer that the main news of the past couple of weeks has been up at the Supreme Court. So there's simply no way we're going to be able to avoid the onslaught of deviants and perverts. I do apologize in advance. But we'll start somewhere else. We'll start with the bad religion file, because I think that's a better way to ease my extremely attractive audio engineer into the broadcast this week. We'll go to Hollywood. This is from WorldNet Daily. Two Hollywood producers are now conducting a nationwide casting call for children who have allegedly been reincarnated from other people. As you can well imagine, it'll be a new reality show. Now, the series is titled The Ghost Inside My Child, and it's going to be produced for the Biography Channel. And they had an online announcement to recruit victims of reincarnation. I guess you can't say victims of reincarnation. I don't know what you would call people who are allegedly reincarnated. But there's a casting call online from the producers. And it goes something like this. Are you a parent whose child has or is experiencing past life memories? Have you always wanted to meet and hear from other families and parents who are going through the same thing? Has your child told you details of his or her inexplicable memories of another life? Have we had any of that, my dear, with our children? All three of them. All three of them were apparently some sort of a hierarchy back in Egypt, I think, and France during the Renaissance. I think they were all princesses because they like to dress up like princesses. Perhaps that explains the whole princess obsession amongst the three McBurney daughters. Anyway, the producers, oddly enough, are a married couple, a man and a woman, in Hollywood, oddly enough. And they have said, quote, when we were pregnant the first time, this idea came to us. We thought, what would we do if this happened to our daughter? It really was a phenomenon. We wanted to tell these parents' stories without trying to prove or disprove them. So rather than approaching the show from the angle of, quote, is this a real phenomenon, unquote, or adding a skeptic to investigate, the producers say, they took the ghost inside my child idea. They decided to present it from the point of view of the parents. And we have another quote from this married couple of Hollywood producers, concerned about memories bubbling to the surface in the children about their past lives. They say, quote, think about it. What would you do if your child told you that they missed their other mom from a past life? Or remembered intricate details of dying in a plane crash in World War II. And upon researching it, you found out their claims were absolutely true. What would you do? Well, I would probably apply for a reality show. For crying out loud. As far as selecting children to appear on the show, producers say they want to make sure that the parents are of sound mind and can handle TV. Which is an oxymoron. Well, obviously, reading about these two Hollywood producers, one need not be of sound mind to not only be able to handle TV, but to be able to produce reality TV. I don't know that I've ever run into anyone who had a claim about memories from a past life, let alone a child. But who knows? With all the psychotropic drugs people are putting their kids on these days, perhaps the kids are hallucinating tales from the Renaissance or the Egyptian pyramids. And if not now for a reality TV show, when? Now is the time. All right. So that's Hollywood for you. The Good Thing, the married couple. Did I mention they were a man and a woman? Hollywood producers? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the only... The bar has been lowered pretty far. When you're just happy that the producers are normal, at least in the sense of marriage. Abnormal in many other ways, indeed. Looking for reincarnated children. Okay, well, let's move an update on a story we had a few weeks ago. This is from the Science Really file. Neuroscientists, according to the Daily Mail in the United Kingdom, neuroscientists claim to have found a way to predict whether convicted criminals are likely to reoffend by looking at their brain scans. That's right, I said brain scans. According to an American imaging expert, convicts showing a low activity in an area of the brain associated with decision-making and action are more likely to be arrested again. The researchers used functional magnetic resonance imaging to focus on activity in a section of the anterior cingulate cortex, a small region in the front of the brain involved in motor control and executive function. Right there in the front of the brain. The forehead again. That's why I'm saying this is an update to a story we had a few weeks ago where there was a dark spot in the brain scans in the forehead of hardened criminals. And apparently there's something going on in the forehead that we're beginning to be able to analyze. And I find it quite interesting. And let's see, did we have anything else? Yeah. Criminals who had lower ACC activity during monitoring were more likely to be arrested again after getting out of prison. 2.6 to 4.3-fold higher rate for nonviolent criminals. This lack of electrical activity in the forehead, oddly enough. It says in the Bible that God placed a mark on Cain's forehead. Anyway, I don't want to draw too many conclusions. I just find it interesting, and I'm into this kind of stuff. That's all. All right, let's move on to reason 675 to keep your children out of the government schools. This, again, from WorldNet Daily. A high school teacher in Portland, Oregon, says he's about to be fired because of his opposition to Planned Parenthood and abortion. Bill Diss has taught high school for 11 years, but was recently escorted from his classroom by police and ordered not to return. Apparently, let's see what happened here. Diss was reprimanded for trying to stop a presentation about a pregnancy program in his classroom. He said he was expecting advocates to come in from the teen outreach program in town, but instead, the instructors of this pregnancy program presented their credentials, showing that they were from Planned Parenthood, and he told them they had to leave. He asked them to leave. Well, they came back with the principal a little bit later, and the principal and the Planned Parenthood officials had him removed from the school. And by the way, this fellow, he was recently awarded certification as the only teacher in Oregon qualified to teach college-level computer science to high school students for dual credit. He's won numerous awards, and he claims to be a devout Catholic who opposes Planned Parenthood because they murder innocent children. Well, yeah, he was. He's been reprimanded. He's been removed from the classroom. Yeah. Reason number 675. One student told a local television station that students sometimes make fun of the teacher, Mr. Bill Diss, for his pro-life views. So not only do you want to keep your kids out of the government schools because the school is likely to allow Planned Parenthood to come in and talk to the children about pregnancy, teen pregnancy being a matter on which Planned Parenthood has some expertise, but also because the other kids are just so cold and cruel and heartless, having been raised in a godless environment. They make fun of a guy because he wants to defend innocent children and the God-given right to life of all people. So, these compose reason number 675. To keep your children out of the government schools, if you're sending your kids to the government schools, you're sinning against your children and against God, and there will be both temporal and eternal consequences that you must consider as you find a way to get your kids out before they are permanently inoculated from a relationship with their creator. All right. Now, I've got to... Hillary Clinton came out and endorsed... I hate to say it, my dear. She endorsed homosexual marriage. Hillary did. Yeah. She said that gay rights are animal rights. I'm sorry. She said gay rights are human rights, said Hillary Rodham Clinton. I'm sorry. I know she's a fan of animal rights, too, so I get confused sometimes. According to the caucus blog at the New York Times, Hillary has endorsed homosexual marriage. New York Times reports that Ms. Clinton's announcement represents a switch in position. Oddly enough, that's kind of a funny way to put it. As a presidential candidate back in 2008, she explicitly opposed same-sex marriage, saying that she only favored civil unions, except in the case of her and her husband Bill, where she was pretty much stuck with a fairly uncivil union, and she certainly wouldn't endorse that for anyone. But apparently she's made the big switch from endorsing civil unions now to endorsing full-on homosexual marriage. Do we have a quote from Hillary? Let's see here. LGBT Americans are our colleagues, our teachers, our soldiers, our friends, our loved ones, and they are full and equal citizens and deserve the rights of citizenship. That's Hillary coming out. You know, just a couple weeks ago, Bill Clinton came out and expressed his explicit support for overturning the Federal Defense of Marriage Act and for homosexual marriage and pretty much just about anything else. Hey, it's Bill Clinton. Anything goes. All right. Let's see here. I'm just so sick of politics. I'm so sick of the homosexual. I'll tell you what, folks. The cascade of events over the past few weeks has been so enormous and has been growing at such an exponential rate that it's actually terrifying to normal people like us that it won't be long before the homosexuals are stringing Christians up in the street. And see, I had thought that it would certainly not be my generation to whom that would happen. But now I'm worried that the homosexuals are going to take over and conquer the world, and I'm going to be an old man in a wheelchair, and I'm not going to be able to get away from them. And they're going to string me up, and it's going to be quite an ugly scene. And what I'm getting at, folks, is I know all of you want to be very nice and feel very good and loving towards your fellow man, and you think that endorsing and supporting homosexual behavior is just part of being nice. But in the end, your nicety is going to get all of us killed. And especially we, us, the Christians. We're the ones who have the most to fear, at least in a temporal sense, when the homosexuals take over the world. And it's happening faster than I would have ever thought. All right, now, coming off a Hillary Clinton story, I have a related story. The Centers for Disease Control has released new data saying that as of 2008, the total number of existing sexually transmitted diseases in the United States is 111 million. Nearly 111 million active venereal diseases in the United States as of 2008. And now I'm trying to do the math on that. As of 2008, there were about 305 million people total. Now, what do you think? How many? A third of those are probably of age where they can engage in this type of behavior. So what's that, about 100 million? It appears that more than one in three adults, or at least people of sexual maturity, are infected with a venereal disease at any given time. And that's a pretty scary number, about a third. One in three. Wow. Talk about things moving and cascading at exponential rates. It's pretty scary what's going on out there. But as you abandon the foundation of a creator and you get further and further away from that, you get further and further away from morality, and you fall further and further into lasciviousness, well, you're going to get all kinds of venereal diseases and homosexuals getting married on the steps of the state capitol, and before long, they'll be stringing up Christians in the street. And I think it's coming sooner rather than later. I had hoped that we were making a stand and fighting it off, but apparently not. I have a quote here, I think, if I can find it. Yes, Rush Limbaugh has come out. What did Rush have to say? He says we've lost the battle on gay marriage, he calls it. And when I say gay, I don't mean happy, folks. I mean homosexual. And so does Rush. He says, I don't care what the Supreme Court does. This is now inevitable, talking about homos getting married. And it's inevitable because we lost the language on this, says Rush. It's inevitable because we lost the language. Rush, we didn't lose the language. What we lost was the ability to recognize criminal activity. Homosexual activity, especially the advocacy of such activity as normal, is criminal behavior, Rush. So the battle was lost long before we started squabbling over marriage. It was lost when the Christians and the conservatives and the sensible, normal people decided that homosexuality was no longer criminal. She's got the jack. 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 She's got it's the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. So rude of you, Angus, to cut in the middle of that story about Rush Limbaugh and Hillary Clinton. But that was an appropriate bumper, and we do appreciate that. So you got Hillary, you got VD, you got Rush Limbaugh. What's the next? Well, of course, Bill O'Reilly would come next. Naturally. Bill O'Reilly said last week that same-sex, he believes that the argument is lost as well, and he says same-sex marriage advocates have a more convincing argument than opponents. That's Bill O'Reilly, America's conservative voice, says that the homos have a better argument than the conservatives, and he says that the argument on the other side, meaning against homosexuals, the argument on the other side hasn't been able to do anything but thump the Bible, says Bill. But I would say, Bill, it's a severe lack of Bible thumping that has led to this problem. And it's also the fact that a lot of Christians watch you and consider you a conservative. And so Christianity has been diluted down to virtual meaninglessness for the vast majority of the population who go to church once in a while and claim to think that they might possibly be Christians, or at least that they like the whole idea of Jesus. Bill O'Reilly has been one of the main problems. By the way, Bill says, on the gay marriage thing, I don't feel that strongly about it one way or another. No, Bill doesn't feel that strong. Let the whole society devolve into complete and utter chaos, sexual chaos and libertinism. Everybody can do whatever they want, as far as Bill O'Reilly is concerned. And you Fox News consumers continue to tune in to this total charlatan liar and believe that he's some kind of conservative. And it's just embarrassing, frankly, that Bill O'Reilly is who he is. Was he not a... Wasn't he like a Hollywood Reporter type, sleazy, you know, reported on affairs and illicit pregnancies in Hollywood? Isn't that how he got his start? How did he become a conservative leader?
It's like a Geraldo.
Yeah, there you go. Geraldo's another perfect example. Geraldo ends up on Fox News, i.e. Geraldo is now a conservative. All right. That's no. Bill Hemmer, he hosts the morning news there, I believe, at Fox. And Bill Hemmer is Fox News's way of opening the door to normalizing relationships with the perverts and homosexuals around the country. Not that we have anything against Bill or any suspicions about what he's up to. Let's move on to the political heartbreaker file. That's right. Conservatives and Republicans all across the country are waiting, looking. They're searching for that next Ronald Reagan. Who will be the one to take up the gauntlet and lead conservatives through the 21st century, or at least into the 21st century? They're all waiting and watching. And up pops the head of one, Rand Paul. Had an opportunity to have a good conversation about Rand. And do I have the other fellow here? Neurosurgeon Benjamin Carson. These are the two leading contenders to be the next great conservative hope. And Rand Paul this week, according to MSNBC, introduced fetal personhood legislation last week. It's called the Life at Conception Act, introduced by Rand Paul, which would ostensibly extend constitutional rights to pre-born humans. I inserted the word ostensibly because MSNBC insists that that Rand Paul, well, they wanted to ask Rand Paul about this. Well, a bunch of liberals, they kind of like Rand Paul and his whole position on drones and libertarianism and all that. But then he introduces this Life at Conception Act, and the liberals get quite upset with him. And they want to know what's going on. So an article here by Steve Bannon, writing for the Rachel Maddow blog, because Rachel Maddow can barely write, and certainly not write anything interesting. So the Maddow blog this past week was written by a guy named Steve, because even a guy named Steve can write things that are more interesting than the blather of Rachel Maddow. So the author asks on the MSNBC Maddow blog of Mr. Paul, what about giving Americans the ability to make their own choices? Don't worry, says MSNBC, the Kentucky senator intended to make exceptions. That's right. There's a quote here from Rand Paul regarding his Life at Conception Act. What does Rand say? He says, quote, there are thousands of exceptions. Thousands. Not just an exception for this or that. Rand says there's thousands. You can drive a tractor trailer through the exceptions in this bill. Why are you people getting upset with me? He says there's thousands of exceptions to his proposal to ban all abortions. How can someone say that and be considered rational? You have a bill to ban all abortions, you said. But there are thousands of exceptions? Rand, really? Are you qualified, Rand? Okay, Rand, we know that you have aspirations, but I want you to sit down and shut up because you've proven yourself unqualified. He's got a bill to ban all abortions. He's got thousands of exceptions. What does he say? Even if there were eventually a change in the law, says Rand, let's say people came more to my way of thinking. Now, we don't know what Rand Paul's way of thinking is at this point because he says he wants to ban all abortions with thousands of exceptions. But I think he's implying that let's say people start to become more pro-life. Well, if that happens, says Rand, there would still be a lot of complicated things the law may not ultimately be able to address in the early stages of pregnancy that would have to be a part of what occurs between the physician, the woman, and the family. That sounds like a press release from 1976 from Planned Parenthood. And Rand Paul is the next great conservative hope to lead us out of the wilderness. Well, that's why it's the political heartbreaker file. Just in case you were hitching your wagon to Rand's star, I just want to let you know, and I want to break your heart. And I want to do it early on in the game, see? It's better to be heartbroken early than to be deceived and misled and participate in the campaign of a man who is unqualified to be the next great conservative leader. Rand Paul, sit down, sir. Now, next, another story from the political heartbreaker file. More. Oh, it's sad. This is from Newsmax. You've all heard of the pediatric neurosurgeon, one Benjamin Carson. He's become the darling of conservatives since speaking against nationalized health care, but he's now under fire for comments he made about homosexuals. You can't say anything bad about homosexuals. I mean, you can if you're on the Weekly Worldview, but that's about it. If you have any political aspirations, if you have any social aspirations, if you have any entertainment aspirations, if you just want to be liked, well, you can't say anything bad about homosexuals. They're the new, and in fact, I think they have displaced the homeless as the new strata of society who cannot be made fun of, mocked, doubted, or ever spoken badly of. I remember when I was growing up, it was the homeless. You know, they were all St. Francis of Assisi laying in the gutter, vomiting on themselves. But now it's the homosexuals. You know, as they sodomize and abuse one another in the bathrooms of homosexual bars, we're all to look to them as the epitome of what is societal evolution. And you can't say anything bad about them. And let's see, what did Mr. Carson say? Let's see here. He told MSNBC's Andrea Mitchell Reports, which is apparently a show on MSNBC, last Friday. It might have been the Friday before last. I was on the road last week, folks. I apologize. I couldn't make it to the studios, unable to do the show. So some of these stories might be a little over a week. They might not be from this past week. And I think Carson's heartbreaking statement is a little over a week old. Carson told Fox News Channel's Sean Hannity, here's what he said. He said, quote, "My thoughts are that marriage is between a man and a woman. It's been well established. It's a fundamental pillar of society. And no group, be they gays, be they NAMBLA, be they people who believe in bestiality, it doesn't matter who they are. They don't get to change that definition," unquote. So that was Mr. Carson's statement on Fox News. And as you can well imagine, the rest of the media, in fact, I'm sure half the producers at Fox News became irate that he would say anything like that. He's now been asked to step down as the commencement speaker at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. And apparently he's agreed to just step down because he doesn't want to get up in front of a bunch of college students and say the truth. Because that would end his political career immediately. In fact, Carson has apologized for his choice of words in a Baltimore Sun story last Friday, but he says he's not apologizing for his position on the subject. And here's how he says, first of all, "I certainly believe gay people should have all the rights that anybody else has." Okay. So, note to Rush Limbaugh, what Mr. Carson just said, that's where we lost this debate. As soon as we started saying that homosexuality is not criminal, but in fact it's normal and they need to be treated just like everybody else, that's when we lost. And that was some time back, I think in the 80s, maybe the early 90s. I forget exactly when. I wasn't very politically engaged at the time. But this is now the conservative position, that gay people should have all the rights that anybody else has. And therein lies the essence of the defeat of the normal world by the perverts and deviants who are intent on killing themselves, each other, and eventually all of us. Not to put too fine a point on it, and I don't want you to think that I'm conspiratorial, I don't think the homosexuals are going to come and burn down my house and kill me tomorrow. But it's just a matter of time. When this type of behavior is taken to its logical conclusion, unless it is segregated as criminal, it will take over and it will kill everybody. So we must continue the fight, and we will do so here at the Weekly Worldview. And in so doing, ensure that this broadcast is never on the radio, never on television, never anywhere except on the internet. Because I've obviously inoculated myself from ever having a career in the media or politics by saying that homosexuals, people who publicly advocate homosexual behavior are criminals. That's right. If you publicly advocate it, that is a criminal offense. And so there. And you know what? I don't necessarily want a career in politics or in, I don't want to be on TV. And I don't much care about the radio either. I'd much rather speak to the truth to a small cadre of normal people to whom I can relate than try to get the adulation of a bunch of freaks who I can't even comprehend. There we go. All right, so do we have something else here? Please, I know my extremely attractive audio engineer, she's looking at me like, could you please move on from the homos? I can't take another story. All right, let's move on to the personhood file. 340 sheriffs have publicly stated that they will not enforce gun laws that they believe are unconstitutional. That's right. There's an organization, the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association, and they now have a running tally of all the sheriffs across the nation that have joined together to defend the Constitution and the Second Amendment. Reports state that the number of sheriffs taking action against infringement on the Second Amendment continues to climb as the gun control debate heats up. And if you've listened to the show, you know my position on this. I applaud these sheriffs for standing up for the Second Amendment, but I'm wondering where they are on the God-given right to life, because they seem to be missing in action. And let me make a prediction about these sheriffs, who are basically low-level functionary bureaucrats. 90% of them will blink and back off their position the minute their pension is threatened. I guarantee it. All these brave sheriffs who say they'll never allow, they'll never enforce, they'll never do this, they'll never do that, you watch. You won't be able to find them with a GPS when they're threatened with losing their pension. That's, you know, and people are awfully brave when there's no action required. You know, these sheriffs can sit up there and say, well, I'm not going to do this, and I would never do that, I'm not going to enforce this, and they look brave, and they get cheers, and they get clapped, but you wait till they have to step up and actually do something before you start applauding these people. And I'm not going to stand up and give any of these sheriffs any credit until at least one of them will step out of his bureaucratic comfort zone and start shutting down abortion clinics. All right, boys, put those guitars away. This is the Weekly Worldview. I'm Doug McBurney, and we are rounding second. We're halfway home. So glad to have you aboard this week. Just shameful. Shameful about these bureaucrats. But we've got to move on. This is a story that relates back. Let me see here. We had a story about all the VD, 110,000. Nearly 111,000 active cases of VD at any given moment in America. And now another report, I got this over at cnsnews.com, calling it the Great Crossover. A report by academics and social activists shows that for the first time in history, the median age of American women having babies is lower than the median age of marriage. That's right. And now 48% of first births here in these United States are by unwed mothers. Almost half the babies being born, ladies and gentlemen, are bastard children. Now tell me that's not a harbinger of bad things to come, for crying out loud. You got a third of the people infected with VD and half the babies being born out of wedlock. And now the solution, obviously, is to marry off the queers, right? Has everyone lost their mind? I have a feeling that future generations, Lord willing that there are any, are going to look back on this generation and wonder what happened. How did they completely lose touch with all reality? Let's see. The author of the report says that young adults now say marriage and children are two separate things. They're just, and I guess technically you could argue that that's true. But the fact that the young people have completely dissociated procreation with marriage, well, it's just terrifying. And we have something from the report here. The report says, culturally, young adults have increasingly come to see marriage as a capstone rather than a cornerstone. That is something they do after they have all their ducks in a row, rather than as a foundation for launching into adulthood and into parenthood. I suppose we all need to stop for a moment and just think about how are we raising our children and what are we teaching our children? Because that's apparently where the breakdown has occurred. When you look at the support for deviance and perversions like homosexual marriage and sex outside of marriage, it seems that the young people have completely different attitudes than even people like me, who I'm only in my 40s. I consider myself still fairly young, but the kids in their 20s, I don't know that I can relate to these people anymore. And I guess it all goes back to the prophetic statements, I should say, made by my pastor 20 years ago. I had just gotten married. I didn't have any kids yet, but I took him seriously when he said, keep your kids out of the public school. Raise your children in the fear and admonition of the Lord. I took him seriously, and I'm so thankful that we did. I don't know how our children are going to relate to their peers if and when we ever let them hang around with their peers. And that day may be quite a long time away. More from the report. The report states that the good news of delayed marriage is now that women can more easily have successful careers. Well, thankfully there's some good news there, because we know that the future of civilization really rests on the successful careers of women. That's what it's all about. You know, the more BMWs you have in your garage, the better chance that your civilization will outlast all the heathen civilizations around you that seek to consume and devour you. That's what we need. More successful careers. CNS News reports that the report is void of any connection between morality and marriage trends and does not mention religion, churches, or God. Patrick Fagan, senior fellow and director of the Marriage and Religion Research Institute at the Family Research Council. Wow, that's a long title. Man, he's the director of Marriage and Religion Research Institute at the Family Research Council. He told CNS News that the prevailing social ethos in today's culture is that anything goes. And that results in a disconnect between this kind of data and its moral implications. So people can read this data, the younger people, I'm sure, and probably the majority of people can read this report and make no connection with morality, because they have no connection with morality. They have no sense that morality means anything to them in their daily life, because they've been raised outside of an idea that there is a creator and that we all are responsible to one another and to God. And once you remove that ethos, well, indeed, anything does go. More, I have another quote from the director of marriage. I have another quote from the senior fellow and director of the Marriage and Religion Research Institute at the Family Research Council. He says, the social science data reflects the reality. So we have a contrast between the reality and the moral discourse about that reality. We can look at the numbers, but we can't discuss the principles behind them. Even though they may be glaring at us, we cannot talk about them. And so, at least in this report, he doesn't. That's it. That's all they quote from Mr. Fagan over at the Family Research Council, that I believe has become a member of the family, the pro-family industry. You know, they give a lot of lip service to pro-family ideas, and they raise a lot of funds with their pro-family initiatives. But when it comes time to action and actually risking one's political career and one's fortune and sacred honor, the Family Research Council is AWOL as usual. So back to the report about 48% of first children being born to unwed mothers. The report goes on, we recognize that not all parents can or should get married. Oh, man. Wow. Okay. The decoupling of marriage and childbearing is deeply worrisome, so the report adds. The solution? More government programs. That's right. They say that, well, they've got a ton of ideas on how the government can help. Mr. Fagan over at the Family Research Council, he does chime in and say that government is incompetent in social policy. And see, that's where Mr. Fagan and the Family Research Council are wrong. The government is competent in social policy. In fact, the law should be the source of social policy. And if the law respected marriage and the fact that adultery is a criminal offense and that fornication is a criminal offense, then we wouldn't be where we are. But then again, the Family Research Council wouldn't have issues like this upon which to send out fundraising letters. So Mr. Fagan doesn't seem all that upset by the whole situation. Mr. Fagan says the competence in social policy lies with the family, the church, and the school. They are the three people-forming institutions. Mr. Fagan, you've left out the significant influence of the law. And when the law lies to children, there's very little that the family and the church can do. When the law and the school raise children and inoculates them from God, raises them to doubt reality and objective truth, and to doubt where they came from and where they're going. The church and the family have enemies in the school and in the law. And by law, I mean the government. And so I hope all is not lost, at least not in my household. You know, and I hope you're taking note and doing what's right in your household, because the whole world is spinning out of orientation to anything relating to reality. And hopefully when the calliope crashes down, there will be a few of us normal people left who can pull these heathens up out of the mire and save them from themselves. I certainly hope so. And I'm speaking in a temporal sense there only. All right, now speaking of the whole world being our enemy, this is from Fox News. A coalition of Eagle Scouts, Scoutmasters, and parents have launched a new organization in opposition to any attempt to allow open homosexuality in the Boy Scouts of America. Did you hear the operative phrase there, ladies and gentlemen? They don't want to allow open homosexuality. So Rush says we've lost the language, but it's not just that we've lost the language, Rush. We've lost the ability to discern what is right and correct, because they don't want open homosexuality. The new coalition, spokesmen say they support the current policy in scouting. Well, what is the current policy, you may ask yourself? Well, I will answer it for you. The current policy of the Boy Scouts of America allows anyone to participate regardless of their sexual orientation. It does prohibit open and aggressive promotion of homosexuality and political agendas. That's the current policy. So the current policy of the Boy Scouts of America is not that homosexuality is a criminal and dangerous behavior that will not be permitted to be a part of the fabric of the Boy Scouts of America. They just don't want the open, aggressive promotion of homosexuality. Another spokesman for the new coalition said, the only answer to the controversy, because, you know, the Boy Scouts say they're being bullied now by these homosexual activist lobbyists. And indeed they are. And there is quite the controversy afoot as to what's going to happen as far as the Boy Scouts letting homos into their tents. They say the only answer is to embrace the unchanging word of the living God and our Creator, who said that He created us male and female from the beginning. Oh, wait a minute. That's not what the spokesman for the new Boy Scout Coalition said. No, I'm sorry. Actually, the spokesman said the only answer to the controversy is to embrace the 2000 Supreme Court decision that ruled the Boy Scouts had a constitutional right to freedom of association. Yeah. Well, good luck with that, Boy Scouts of America. Putting all your hopes on maintaining the integrity of your organization on a Supreme Court decision and abandoning the unchanging written word of the living God who says He created us male and female from the beginning. If I was the Boy Scouts, and I would hope that if you are members of the Boy Scouts, if your sons go to the Boy Scouts, I would hope that that organization would base its fundamental worldview on the Christian worldview that animated that organization and indeed our entire nation before the most recent collapse into utter insanity began to occur. All right. The new pope. I have to talk about the new pope. Have we been on the air since the new pope became... whatever they do for the new pope, since he got the hat and shoes. I don't think he took the hat or the shoes. Yeah, I saw him the other day in a picture. He's wearing some beat-up old black tennis shoes. Cool. No, the pope's supposed to have some really, really nice shoes. This pope is trying to be a different kind of pope. I had high hopes for the pope, but I've got a new file that I just started. This is from the That Just About Does It for the Papacy file. I apologize for all you people who had high hopes for Rand Paul, Ben Carson, or Pope, what's his name? Pope Francis. Well, here you go. Vice President Joe Biden and Democrat leader Nancy Pelosi both received communion during the Mass to celebrate the installation of the Pope. In spite of their obvious public and emphatic position that it should be legal and good to murder innocent children, which I believe the Pope disagrees with. And I think that there's some order there at the top of the Catholic Church, I forget what they call it, an encyclical or that says that politicians who support the killing of innocent people should not receive Mass. But to avoid an uncomfortable situation, Pope Francis decided to go ahead and give him Mass. And so that just about does it for the papacy this time around. Reverend Frank Pavone, founder of Priests for Life, he's pretty upset. He says Vice President Biden and Pelosi should certainly not receive communion, either at the papal installation or anywhere else. Communion means union, and they're not in union with the church on the most fundamental moral issue. This guy should be the Pope, Frank Pavone, for crying out loud. If there was any justice in the world, and the world wasn't run and dominated by Luciferian forces of darkness, satanic forces of darkness. Anyway, Pavone predicted a massive public uproar if these two baby killers took communion at the Vatican. Well, guess what? There was no public uproar. Everybody pretty much yawned, except us here at the Worldview. We're in an uproar. We're quite upset. That just about does it for the papacy this time around. Thank you very much. Go sit down with Rand Paul and Ben Carson, Mr. Francis. Sit down and shut up. You're not qualified. Although I was appreciative of him keeping the old sneakers and not getting the $200,000 shoes that they usually get. I mean, that's all well and good. But Pelosi and Biden kill children. And so that's much more important than your position on social justice, Mr. Francis, and I think we're going to hold you to account, and the shoes are not going to make up for that. It's the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. And I'm in an effort to put off another story about the homosexuals pouring out of the closet all over our nation's capital and elsewhere. I want to avoid that for you, my dear. Let's go to this story of T.J. Lane. Now, this was last week while I was on the road. T.J. Lane is an Ohio teenager who admitted killing three students in a high school cafeteria in February of last year. About 10 days ago, he was sentenced to life in prison without parole. He shot and killed three fellow students. As he was sentenced by the judge, the 18-year-old, according to Sky News, the 18-year-old chuckled as his life term was imposed. He removed his shirt sleeves to reveal a T-shirt reading killer that he had scrawled himself on his T-shirt. That T-shirt was similar to the T-shirt he wore during the very shooting. He wore it right in front of the judge, took it off, took off his shirt sleeves, and showed the T-shirt emblazoned with the word killer. At one point, Lane swiveled around in his chair toward the gallery where his own family and those of the slain teenagers were sitting, and he spoke one sentence, making an obscene remark to the families of the victims, cursing at them and sticking his middle finger up in the faces of the victims' relatives. He was not eligible for the death penalty because he was 17 at the time of the shooting. He's been sentenced to life in prison. What do I want to say about this? This young man is eligible for the death penalty, by the way. Just because this court doesn't have the sensibility to impose the death penalty at this time does not mean that T.J. Lane is not eligible, nor shall he avoid the death penalty, ladies and gentlemen. T.J. Lane will face the death penalty. But the courts have shown themselves to be completely impotent, not only impotent, but counterproductive. And, this makes me so angry that I would like to go to this place where this young man is locked up, and I would like to kill him with my bare hands myself. That's how angry this makes me. Now, I have to give place to wrath. I know the Bible says give place to wrath. But, ladies and gentlemen, the place for wrath is within the justice system. The book of Romans tells us that the governing officials do not bear the sword in vain, that they're to be a terror to evildoers. So what do we do with our wrath? Can you imagine the family enduring this, being cursed at and mocked by the very person who butchered their child? Where do we give place to wrath when the place that we are to give it mocks us, ridicules us, and allows this man to live who should not live not even one more day? Anyway, I feel like my desire to kill this boy with my own hands is a righteous desire. And I feel no compunction to forgive him of anything. My only desire is to introduce him personally to Jesus Christ. Who, yes, Jesus Christ can be your Savior if you humble yourself. But if you do not, if you're like T.J. Lane, given the finger and cursing and mocking, he will be your judge. And then the justice system has failed to arrange that introduction and that judgment. And in so, they have failed not only the families of these victims, but they've failed T.J. Lane. That's right, because the only hope that T.J. Lane ever had for repentance was to be told that you're going to meet Jesus and you're going to meet him real soon, young man. You better sit down and think about what you did. Instead, he's going to be in prison for, well, they say life without parole, but I don't know what that means anymore. Just really makes me angry. I better just put that aside. Let's see. These next two stories are about homos. Then the third one's about homos. All right. My extremely attractive audio engineer is elected to leave the studio as I talk about the homo marriage debate up in D.C. You all know that the Supreme Court is hearing arguments right now inside the Supreme Court. Last week, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments in the case to determine whether the federal government or the 50 states will decide what marriage is. So that's what we've, wow, that's what we've come to. The Supreme Court is not even, apparently not even debating whether or not homosexual marriage is an offense to all that is American and shouldn't be allowed. I don't even think that's on the table. It's just a matter of whether the federal government should federalize the institution of homosexual marriage, or should we let the states institute it state by state, as it's happening right now. Both sides of the debate were out in force in Washington. According to the Daily Mail, Christian opponents easily outnumbered the advocates for homosexual marriage. This is what I find hard to understand. We outnumber the perverts, yet the perverts are winning. And I had this conversation with my pastor, and I think he's right. It's not that these people want to engage in this type of disgusting behavior. Most of them don't. But they want to advocate it because it inoculates them from feeling guilty about all the sin and perversion in their lives. You know, even short of homosexual perversion. Other types of immorality that people want to participate in, they really want to feel justified. And so when you decriminalize and promote as good the most offensive of all types of immorality, when you elevate that to goodness, well, everything you do, well, that can't be that bad, right? No need to ask for forgiveness. Legalizing homosexual marriage will just be one more step in inoculating another generation of children against salvation and helping them on the road to hell, which is wide, the wide path that leads to homosexual marriage and to personal destruction, the loss of one's soul in hell. That's what they're doing. I've got a New York Times article on the young conservatives who oppose same-sex marriage, and there are quotes from a number of different groups that have now come together around this issue quickly. These groups are the Heritage Foundation, the National Organization for Marriage, the Manhattan Declaration, the Love and Fidelity Network, the Cornerstone Policy Research and Cornerstone Action. Is there anyone I missed? These are all groups who are now organized against homosexual marriage. And they identify themselves as young conservatives and part of the pro-marriage movement. They see themselves at the beginning of a long political struggle, much like the battle over abortion. They want to shift the terms of the debate away from gay rights and toward the meaning of marriage. Yeah, one of the executive directors of one of these organizations, I've just named them, he says, to the extent that the other side is able to frame this as a vote for gay people to be happy, it will be challenging for us. So let me tell you what I see happening here, ladies and gentlemen. I see young people who've grown up in the pro-life, pro-family industry and who've learned the machinations of fundraising and a never-ending political struggle. I see them now forming their own organizations and looking forward to a long career promoting the idea of a male-female marriage without ever being able to present a cogent argument against homosexual marriage. Not unlike the National Right to Life Committee decided about 30, 35 years ago. They ensconced themselves into a fundraising position and have now built their careers around an issue that they never intended to actually stop. And I read the quotes from these young people. They say opponents of homosexual marriage say they must argue in favor of traditional marriage, not against gay people and not against gay rights. And a number of other quotes from these young people. They admit that public opinion is increasingly seeming to shift in favor of same-sex marriage. And the issue, proponents of traditional marriage say, is really one of presentation. really just one of presentation. These opponents of same-sex marriage say they realize they may lose the current fight, but optimistically they take the long view, pointing to Roe versus Wade. Did you hear what I just said? They take the long view, pointing to Roe v. Wade as an example, a battle in which conservatives have been defeated on every front for 40 years. But the fundraising has been good. And these organizations like the National Right to Life Committee and other pro-family, and that put that in quotes, organizations, have raised millions and millions of dollars and funded very, very generous pensions. And then these young people, advocates of, what are they? They call themselves the pro-marriage movement. They're now taking that template of never-ending fundraising and phony baloney war making against the enemy. And they make the observation that, look at Roe v. Wade, the fight continues 40 years later, as if we're winning. Unbelievable. One of the young people says, I'm not talking just 15 years. I'm talking 40 years or even 100 years. I can't help but think that the uniqueness of man-woman marriage will be adjudicated over time. Folks, these young people are completely deluded. They're putting their hopes in presentation and adjudication instead of the enduring word of the living God, our Creator, who said He created us male and female from the beginning, and that anything outside of that, one man, one woman, is an abomination. It's dangerous, it's criminal, it's corrosive to society, and not it must not be fought. It must be stopped. But I don't think conservatives know how to fight anymore. I don't think Christians know how to fight anymore. I think we've been beaten down in the abortion battle for so long that there's simply no hope of opening up another successful front. And that's why, as for me and my house, we're going to focus on our own family, raising our children in the fear and admonition of the Lord, being a light to our neighbors and the people with whom we come in contact with, and not suffering anyone's illogical, foolish, and ungodly behavior in order to be liked. There are a number of battles that are going to come down upon us, but I can tell you that the only battle that really matters is raising a generation that is not so disconnected from their Creator as to decide to follow the strategy of the pro-life industry as we move into these other battles. It's just sad. It's just sad. And I don't want to end on a bad note. I want to try and end on something a little more upbeat. Can I possibly do that? It's possible. Let's go to the money blog at CNN.com. Neiman Marcus has settled a case with the Federal Trade Commission by admitting they were selling products described as fake fur when in fact they were made with real fur. So that's how far we've fallen, ladies and gentlemen. Neiman Marcus has to pawn off real fur as fake fur. And they got busted by the Federal Trade Commission. And they weren't the only ones. A number of retailers were misrepresenting that real fur was fake fur. And then also, Neiman Marcus admitted to representing that rabbit fur was mink fur. Now that I have a problem with.
Well, I want that.
You want the mink or the rabbit?
Mink.
You want mink. Well, they said it was, they tried to pawn off rabbit fur as mink fur. And that's not right. Okay? But the fact that they were selling real fur as fake fur, probably in order to boost sales and try to avoid having red ink thrown on their merchandise. Well, it just strikes me as a little bit odd. And something that's a bit of fluff and really not that big of a deal, and something that we can just chuckle about. As our world collapses around us, as our neighbors are being sucked and pulled down into hell by the lies of politicians and religious leaders who have disconnected themselves from the reality that is the Creator God. I'm going to tell you right now, you listening to this show, you are going to meet your Creator one day.
And that day is going to be more real than any day you ever spent on this earth. It's going to be the most real thing you ever experience. And you better be prepared for it. Fortunately, he gave us a book. He wrote us a really long letter. And he also gave us friends and family and teachers so that we can learn more about him and be prepared for that day. And so I hope you'll do that. Take my advice. All right, that's it for the Weekly Worldview this week. I'll be back next week with my extremely attractive audio engineer, should the Lord tarry. Until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.